Hey guys, before we get into today's episode, we wanted to call out that last week a monumental decision was made in the United States Supreme Court to take away a woman's right, or a person who has ovaries' right, to have an abortion in the case Dobbs v. Jackson's Women's Health Organization. We're going to talk about this in more detail in next week's episode, but we just wanted to call out the fact that this is a dark time in the United States and that we are processing it along with all of you listening. And if you need support, please reach out. But we just wanted to say that we will talk about it. And this episode is about rejection. And that might be kind of hard to listen to right now. And if you're not in a place where that feels okay to listen to and think about, please don't add stress and trauma to your already traumatic week that you've had. And we'll be here when you come back, and we're going to talk about this in more detail next week. Welcome back to Past a Purpose. Thank you so much for joining us again this week. Today, we're going to be talking about an important topic that we haven't really covered before, and it's something that happens to everyone throughout their journey with life and careers: rejection and dealing with rejection and setbacks, and in general, just kind of how to process and work through when you've worked hard for something or when you've really wanted something and you haven't gotten it. So that's kind of where we're going to be headed today. It's just me and Alan today. Alan, how are you? How have you been?
Thanks, Danielle. Crazy busy is pretty normal for me. But this is one of my favorite topics because it kind of wraps up in this notion of failure. And it's one of the core elements of why people don't try stuff. And it then limits kind of their capabilities and their opportunities. So, you know, we're going to discuss a little bit about the fear, the risks of, you know, what we should probably be afraid of and what we really shouldn't be afraid of. And I think I would normally put rejection in that latter category. Also, I wanted to reflect a little bit on what you can learn from rejection, which is arguably one of the most powerful learning tools. That's a bit cliche, but I think it's true. And how we can try to compartmentalize, separate emotionally from it, and learn from the event of rejection so that we can increase the probability we don't get rejected in the next go.
Yeah, I think that this is something that's core to this process, and that also is just something that I don't think we're really taught as human beings on how to deal with. And I think that depending on your upbringing and your family influence, but also culturally, unless you're a unicorn, which I do have a few of those in my life that don't feel this way, but I definitely was not taught to necessarily talk about failures a lot in my life. And failure was not something that I think I was intrinsically taught to deal with in a way that would be positive. And so, like, my dad, when I was a kid, would always say, like, you learn more from your failures than from your successes. But I didn't really know what that meant. And particularly when it came to academic or career pursuits, I don't think it's something that we actually discuss a lot. And so I do remember the first time when we sat down, Alan, oh, many moons ago, about kind of my career aspirations and what I wanted to do. And you kind of were throwing out all these ideas that I had never thought of before. And I was sitting there like, there's no way in hell that I could achieve any of these things that you're talking about. Like, there's just no way. And that was one of the questions that you asked me at the time, which was, what's the worst thing that could happen? And what's the worst thing that could go wrong? And I immediately was like, well, I won't get it. I don't know what could be the worst thing that will go wrong, but like, I just won't get it. And it really took me a while to work through, like, just even getting over that mental image of getting rejected or failing or whatever it was to even start the process.
Yeah, I speak from my own experience and also watching others. We put a lot of emotional resonance on this feeling that we have after we've been rejected. And this happens in relationships. If you're dating, this also happens in career opportunity searches, or if you're applying to schools, or if you're trying to kind of get the internship everybody wants or something like that. So it's common to feel down and to also internalize that as something wrong with me. When you reflect back on it, there's a couple of core elements to consider. One is that it may not, in fact, be you, or also you might not necessarily be ready. And if you really internalize what the lesson is underlying the rejection, you might actually prepare yourself for the next go. And finally, you'll get over it. We always get over it. First of all, rejection is inevitable. Everybody goes through it. everybody goes through rejection. It's, you can't avoid rejection. You will have rejection. And inherently, we all process through whatever it's, whether it's the stages of grief or whatever kind of psychology that you want to apply to it, we get through rejection and we recover from rejection. And if you put some conscious energy to it, we learn an incredible amount about ourselves in that process. So rather than sort of avoiding it, I kind of embrace it. And so I prefer to think of rejection as an opportunity, recognizing that it might be a short-term painful one.
So I think one thing that is important to talk about when talking about the topic of rejection or failure is when you face times in your life when it seems like rejection after rejection is happening. And I had an experience like this in my life in 2019 when I decided to leave my job at the time and I didn't have a backup plan. It was terrifying. I was already in a place where my mental health was terrible and I was struggling on a lot of different dimensions. And it was so hard to, first of all, just leave that because there was a sense of security there, not just financial security, but I had a life there. I had an apartment. I had, you know, my dog, all the things. And so to pick up and leave that was hard to begin with. But then when I was trying to figure out what I wanted to do and applying to jobs after that, and I hadn't decided to go to law school yet and all this stuff, I kept getting like rejection after rejection after rejection after rejection. And I was having, you know, great interviews with like big companies and all this stuff. And I was struggling so hard with that because I already felt terrible on so many different levels. And I was trying the startups and the big companies and all of this stuff. And I was peppering in all of these different roles that I thought felt like me and that I felt capable of doing, and nothing was happening. And it just was so difficult. And so I think that's a question that I have back for you, Alan, which is, I know that you've dealt with this with lots of different students and not just me, and you were there during that time when I was going through all this as well. But what advice or what thoughts do you have about that when it's just everything feels like it's crumbling in those moments? When you can't feel like you get any traction with anything, and how do you move forward in those instances?
Yeah, that's a great scenario because I do see this a lot. And I've actually been in similar situations where I'm kind of hoping or feeling like if I get the one break, it'll kind of make me rebound, if you will. I think part of this is related to sort of therapy that might have to happen outside to unpack the emotional energy of dealing with the loss. Because I suspect that in a situation like you were describing, it's probably analogous almost to a death sort of grief. And so kind of getting through that is part of the process. But also embedded in that story, I'm hearing a sense, which I see commonly, a sense of looking for an external opportunity to fill something that you probably need to fill working on yourself before you get in there. Stated differently, there's another way to think about this. When we do our interpersonal dynamics training, one of the things we think about is, how do we enter a room? What kind of energy am I bringing when I engage with people? And if you're still healing from something, you might not notice it, but you might be bringing in an energy that isn't really resonating with somebody who's evaluating you for fit with their company or their opportunity. And so the key, in at least my personal experience, has been to try to emotionally separate for a moment, reflect on like, who am I in the moment? What am I really after? Can I get some grounding for myself? And then what is it that I'm chasing? And can I walk in there clean? Can I walk in there with a sense of self, a sense of confidence around my purpose around it, such that I can go in there and not bring in all that other stuff that I might need some therapy or to discuss outside of that environment? I know that isn't sounding particularly clear, but I guess it's trying to unpack all of the energy and all of the reasoning behind why you might be trying to get these opportunities so that you can actually evaluate it.
I know we had an episode with Alex Stavros a while back talking about mental health and kind of how it's connected to careers. But just on the note that you just said, I think that that's something that we don't talk enough about, is how we like to imagine this like work-life balance BS where we can separate our work and our life and that they don't impact one another. And I think that that is a lovely, lofty ideal, but I think that we're all human beings, and it's so hard to do what you just said, which is separate and really show up unbothered by what's going on behind the scenes, whether that's, you know, has to do with relationships or health issues or whatever you're dealing with at that time. That's all showing up in your energy, your anxiety levels, your persona, and kind of what you're going to see out of a situation. And I don't think we talk enough about that. And I don't think, frankly, that most organizations know how to deal with that. And I just wanted to call that out, that what you said was important on that note. But please feel free to keep going.
Yeah, I agree. And just to clarify, I don't mean that we need to shut that piece down and go cold on it. What I mean is work through it such that you have clarity on and you get through that process so that you can move past it and then enter into a discussion. Often you can't separate that in time. And so what's happened in some rejection scenarios, I will actually give it some space and then I'll reflect on it and I'll take some notes and I'll go, okay, how did I show up? Was there anything bothering me from a relationship perspective, or was there some, did I not get sleep? I mean, what was it that bothers me, or how did I show up into the arrangement? What did I communicate both explicitly and implicitly through body language or something like that? So I reflect on that in the moment. I also reflect on kind of the chemistry and the energy in the engagement. I'm assuming there's an interview, if there's any kind of feedback. Did I sense that we were talking about different things and that their expectations were different from my expectations? And I try to evaluate whether there's some piece in there that I can improve on if I were to get another round with somebody else, or even with the same opportunity if I were to replay it. So that learning process takes a lot of introspection and a lot of, but it has to be not harmful introspection, because there's this tendency to internalize that says, oh, I'm not good enough. And, you know, to kind of collapse it in there. I'll never get there. I'm not good enough. They'll never like me. This kind of negative self, like death spiral of emotional energy. It's not that. It's like saying, oh, wait, I remember saying this. I sensed when I said this that they had some weird response to it. And I can give you some specific examples of some experiences I've had recently. I've thrown statements out there, and as soon as I've said them, I kind of was like, I probably wish I'd brought those words back into my mouth. I'll give you one example. When I was doing the job market, I won't mention the name of the university. This is back in 2004, and I was in the city, and I was at dinner, and we were having a casual conversation with the senior person doing the hiring, and she asked me, so what do you think of this city? And I recall saying, well, you know, I've been here many, many times. I'm not really that crazy about the city. But, and it just slipped out of my mouth, and I was like, wow, did I really say that? Things like that. So, I mean, there's some obvious cases where you're like, I might have said something, or I might have pushed something out there, or even things like, I showed up late, and I should have been there on time, things like that. So I try to reflect back, what did I miscommunicate? By the way, this is also related to it, too. So there are two tendencies. I guess let me finish that thought. The first tendency is to do the death spiral of, oh, I'm not good enough, and without unpacking what really happened logically. The second one is to say, oh, they're idiots. They don't understand. And so you deflect the problem to the other side, to the rejecting side, without really unpacking, are they in fact idiots, or was there some sort of responsibility that I had to deliver into the relationship. So I didn't bring experience to the table. Or some of it's obvious, like they need somebody 6 foot tall to play basketball. I can't ever deliver that. So just thinking in terms of the other side and getting empathy or getting into the shoes of the other side, is there something that I could have communicated differently that might have built trust or something like that? So, but it takes a logical approach to try to disentangle what really happened and do the learning such that you can fill those gaps. This is taking us back to an episode we did a long time ago, about filling gaps in what the gatekeeper is looking for.
It's called Mind the Gaps. Anyone wants to go back and listen to it? So I'm very familiar with the death spiral. We're best friends. So I think that that's something that's super, super relevant. And I think it's really hard sometimes to not feel like everything is very personal when you're getting rejected. And it's very, and this is the thing that I wanted to bring up too, is because I've had interviews where I have felt like we were really vibing, you know, like we were really doing well and we had great chemistry. I felt like I was hitting on the right notes. And then I got a rejection email and I'm just like, what? You know, and I'm so surprised because it really felt like it was a good fit. And I think that that's difficult too, because when you're talking about these elements of reflecting back and, you know, I love spiraling, not really, that was sarcasm, but when I am having those spirals, I am ruminating on all the things that I'm saying. And the best scenarios for me, when I've done my best and I've shown up as my most authentic self and I've felt really good about where I was at with my answers and what I was giving in that moment, and then I don't get it, that feels awful because you don't know why. And I think that that's the other piece of this too, is like both things can feel very personal, whether it's like you feel like maybe you screwed up some things and you wish that you would have said them differently, or that you feel like you nailed it, you were on the top of your game and you still didn't get it. And those, I think it's really hard. I don't know. That's another question I want to ask you, Alan, is when you feel like you've done everything you possibly could have and you didn't get it, how do you deal with that? Because if it feels like you're putting, this is something I've struggled with, is if I'm like, I'm giving this everything I have, this is such a great opportunity and I want it for XYZ reasons, and I'm still not getting it, even when I show up as my best self, even when I'm on cloud nine doing great. How do you deal with that?
Yeah. So I have a couple thoughts on that. One is you have the right in most situations to ask for as much feedback as you can politely. If you did, in fact, have your best self and you develop rapport, then you're more likely to get useful feedback. Now, you're an attorney.
Not yet. Still have to take the bar.
But you know the other side's going to give you the politically, legally correct response, which means that they're going to be a little bit vague on the truth. But you have an opportunity to get feedback, which may actually help in some regards. So I'll give you some examples where I've gotten some rejections, but I've also been told that some subset of the committee that was evaluating me was inspired by what I said. And that helps me at least understand that I resonated with some subset and that's useful energy for me. Or maybe you were not fit on X dimension and we need something else. The other thing that helps me understand this, and I guess maybe it's because I have a lot of life experience, which means I'm old, is that I've been on the other side of these things enough to know that there's so much you as the applicant or the wannabe on the other side, you don't know about the politics, about what the needs really are, about whether the opportunity is really there, about whether there's already in somebody internally groomed and you're just going through a process because there's some legal requirement, things like that. There's a lot of information you'll never have access to. And so at some point, I'll speak for myself, I basically say, well, am I comfortable with how I entered the space? Was I authentic to myself? Great. Well, then I can carry that into another engagement. And then I'm going to come back to something that you and I have talked about a lot and that I've mentored other students in a moment on that note. So as long as I know that I came in authentically, that I was genuine, that I did not waste their time, and that I felt some resonance with them, then I know that I at least increased the probability of getting in the door. And if for some reason that I can't observe, I didn't get in the door, then it's just as likely it's an issue on their side as it is I did something wrong. In fact, I would probably suspect it's more likely a problem on their end that you're never going to know. So there's some sort of political baggage behind the scenes you don't even want to be a part of, or there's actually a false line there that doesn't have funding to hire you, or there's some delay, or there's something, there's some stress on the other side that you'll never know about. And so it's, in my mind, it's easy to say, well, there's probably something on their side as well that's a problem. My other comment, which goes to the whole theme of this entire podcast series, is that if I have a personal purpose, I don't need other people to do work on it. I don't need somebody to validate my entry to allow me to do stuff. I'll do it anyway. And this goes back to when I was counseling students to get into some elite business school opportunities. And many of them are like, well, what do I need to say in order to get access? And I said, well, here's what I know observing these students, and I'll use some of the Stanford students with whom I've worked. My experience has been that the students who get into that school don't need it. They don't need it. Stated differently, they're going to do the projects they plan to do with or without that admissions. And the admissions process and the opportunity that's there is an amplification thing. It's not something that they have to have in order to do what they plan to do. So in some cases, when I go in, I'll say now, if I explore opportunities now, I know what I'm trying to accomplish. And so I can either get people to partner with me who are collaborating and are excited to work with me on it, or they can choose not to engage me. And that's okay, because I'm just going to continue to do it myself or do it with people who do want to do it with me. And so that's kind of how I process it now.
Yeah, this is reminding me of the episode that we did with Monique Malcolm Hay. And the thought that I'm having is, to take it back even further, when I first started working with you, I remember you telling me some of these things about, if you find what it is that you care about, you don't need other people's permission to do it. Like, as long as you're not harming someone, you're not causing irreparable damage to your reputation. Like, I forget what your things are, but like, if you're not doing those things, nothing is dangerous. You can do it and it's okay. And I remember hearing that from you as a 19, 20 year old at the time. I was like, oh my God, yeah, I need permission from people to do it. Like, I don't know anything. And to think that I needed the opportunities that I was applying for, or like the schools that I was trying to get into, whatever it was, that I needed those things in order to gain entry into the work that I wanted to do. And it's kind of a double-edged sword, I think, of like, you certainly do need experience in certain ways to have access to bigger projects or bigger opportunities for things. But again, tying it back to Monique, I remember Monique talking about looking for things in the opportunities that you do have, like looking for ways to connect and make things feel personal and relevant to the things that you care about, even in your current role, even if your role is not like your dream role. And she was at, I think it was PwC, correct me if I'm wrong, Alan, and she was doing a more traditional, I'd say, job, but she had so many things that tied her to different communities through PwC and outside of PwC that her job felt really connected to her purpose and the things that she wanted. And she didn't ask permission to do those things. She just did them anyway. And to your point, she's at Stanford. So like, to go back to that. But to me, it seems really intimidating, I think, as a young person to hear that of like, I don't need anybody else's permission to do this thing. I'm just going to go do it, because you don't know how to do it and you don't know where to start. But I do think that that's very true, and that you can still work on it regardless of if you have the dream internship or the dream business school or the dream apprenticeship or whatever it is that you want.
Let me clarify a few thoughts about what you were getting after. So I don't think you need permission from anybody to own a passion and to invest energy in learning about it. And if you do that, then you can earn trust with the gatekeepers. Because again, for example, if you're passionate about at-risk youth education policy or passionate about forced human migration, it's pretty easy to do volunteer immersion. If you have any time, even a couple hours, to do some volunteer immersion, do some learning, do a tiny sliver of what Mark Duran does, the kind of volunteer immersive experience, that then gets you some credibility when you have communication with the gatekeepers, and the probability of somebody accepting you into an opportunity goes up that's aligned with that purpose. So that's really what that's about. With respect to what you discussed before, the way I teach when we talk about change management in my change management course, I think there are really three fundamental things that one should actually really care about. And one of them is the fear of or increased probability of death, because it's death. And I'm not going to necessarily choose to engage projects where I increase that probability. Mark Durand is an example of somebody who will do that. I won't choose to do that, nor do I try to counsel students to do that. Increase relative to our current probability of death. The second one related is the increased probability of some sort of brain damage or post-traumatic stress, which harms our ability to think, because for nearly all of our listeners, we can make our living and we can support families and we have most of our energy around our brain. I mean, if I lost an arm, I can still do what I do. I obviously don't want that to happen, but I can afford to and still provide all the learning and opportunities. Nothing really changes. But if I lose my brain and my ability to think, or my ability to think clearly, then that definitively harms my productive capabilities. And the third one, which I'm beginning to wonder whether there is such a thing, is permanent reputation damage. Because for me, this is all about developing trust with people. And if you have permanent reputation damage, then people might not ever trust you again, which significantly harms your opportunities to get access to things. Everything else is recoverable. So you can lose money. That's probably recoverable if you're young. You can definitely be embarrassed or rejected, and that will always be recoverable, because almost always be recoverable, particularly the rejection piece. We do it all, as we said earlier, we do it all the time. But those moments, cliche alert, those are the best learning opportunities if you allow yourself to process the emotions slowly and carefully, perhaps with some therapy, and then move into a stage where I'm like, let me reflect logically on what just happened. And can I try to unpack the episode such that I can say, oh, I'm communicating this direction. What I'm hearing is they don't want to hear that direction. They want to hear the other direction. And I just had a recent experience where I knew I was purposely communicating a direction, and I kept hearing that's not what they were looking for. And so that gives me some processing ability to go, then I have to change how I'm communicating, or it's not the right fit.
So if we were to get tactical here for a second and kind of summarize what we're talking about in a couple of steps for our listeners on how to start processing and learning from rejection, how would you, if we could put it in some tactical steps maybe of like, okay, so first you get rejected from something, then what? Then what should we sit down and do afterwards?
Well, first the advice would be never apply for anything and you never have to go through that pain, right? No, I'm just kidding. The reason I brought that up though realistically is because if you think about it, that is illogical, right? And that's the alternative. And the alternative is, if I'm not willing to accept some probability of rejection, I'll never have any opportunity. It's, again, another cliche. But you have to accept the likelihood of rejection in order to get any opportunity, because the alternative is, I won't apply for anything and I'll just sit in a cocoon and not get anywhere. But to your point, so if I've just processed a rejection, I think the very first stage is sort of an analysis of where am I emotionally. And so where you were, you described an episode where you were in a very, I think what I heard was grief. It's probably more complicated than that, but at a minimum, it sounded like there was some grief in there. There's a lot more happening. But the very first thing is you have to take care of that dark emotional thing. However you can process that, whether it's through therapy, friends, there's got to be a way where you can kind of process the loss or process the confusion first, I think. Then you can start thinking about, okay, how do I stage for what's going next? I think those who are pushing out, well, I'm going to rebound. I mean, it's almost like the rebound in a romantic relationship concept. Well, I'm going to basically go out and find something else to fill the void. And if I get something else, then I can shut down the grief processing, because then I don't have to think about it anymore. You know, one example of a, I think it's a bad coping skill is, well, I'm just going to make myself super busy at work so that I don't have to think about it. And I think most therapists would say that's a terrible, terrible processing skill, although many, many people do, and I've done it myself before. So to me, I think the very first stage is, how much emotional trauma am I in? And can I process that healthy with somebody, maybe professionally? And then, okay, back to core principles. What do I care about? And that's the whole process that we're talking about here. What's my purpose? What do I care about? Where do I want to make some impact? What kind of people do I want to be around? What kind of things do I want to see as far as my impact? Then how can I learn about it in a way where a gatekeeper really wants to drag me along so I can contribute.
Yeah. I'd like to admit publicly on this podcast that when I got rejected from a bunch of consulting roles when I was living in London, it was when I was at LSE, I unhealthily went to Topshop and bought myself a sweater afterwards because I was so sad that I wanted to buy myself a new jumper. But yeah, I think that that's really important. That step one is take care of yourself. And step two is, I'd say even step two is kind of, if you are okay and you have taken care of yourself emotionally, to reevaluate and go back to the situation and think about, okay, what were they looking for? What did I present? What do I think the possible reasoning is behind the rejection? And kind of deal with that. And then potentially go back to what you're talking about and say, okay, what do I care about? And go through all of it. So it's like, I'd say it's almost like a three-step approach. So the first is to confront your emotions. The second is to reflect deeply on what actually occurred in the situation from which you were rejected. And then the third is to go back to your fundamental principles of who you are and what you want to accomplish. That's what I would say is the guidelines.
And I'm going to add an initial step before confronting emotions, which is really critical and is core to the interpersonal dynamics. And it's something that actually I just went through in a different scenario, is articulating what are my emotions. Because actually one of the things that we don't do enough of, and one of the counseling techniques that I have, and I think we talked about it with Monique, is after an engagement, is my energy high or low? When I got rejected, do I feel down? Because we've already been working under the assumption that I feel down, but I've actually been rejected and have felt relief. So I've had episodes where I've gone into an environment and I've actually thought I wanted to get in there. But the more I found out about it, the more anxiety it was introducing to me because it became chaotic. And I'm trying to wrap myself in my brain around what's my life going to be like in here. And for me, too, I also drag a family into these types of scenarios. So what's my whole dynamic going to look like if I engage this? And I go, oh, this is a heck of a lot more chaotic than I want. But yet, I'm captured by the title I might get or the money I might get or the place I might get to live. And then when I get the rejection, like I'm anticipating being distraught about it or being upset about it. And I realize, no, actually my initial reaction was relief. I'm happy. I don't have to try to figure out how to make all that chaos work for me. So it's really critical to realize we have to first say, what am I feeling? And maybe it's a laundry list of emotions, and then move into the confronting the emotions. How do you process the emotions? And then you move into all the other stuff that you suggested. So I do think that's a really good step guide.
Yeah, I think we could have an entire episode on emotions, honestly, because I think that that's something as an adult that I'm still learning how to do, which is actually properly name how I'm feeling versus just going to the standardized, I'm upset or I'm unhappy or something like that. And actually naming, like, I feel sad, I feel frustrated, I feel grief. Like all of those emotions are very different. And that's something that I've had to work on for myself, but that's really helped in situations like the one that we're talking about. But we do not have the time to get into all of that today.
But I do want to follow up on that though, because when you get into that death spiral that we were talking about, I'm not good enough. That's not enough. You can't just say I'm not good enough. You have to say, I didn't get across the line, but here's what, and you have to unpack it and say, for these reasons. And so I am in fact capable of doing the job because I have the technological capability, or if it's a singing thing, I can actually sing. I can sing. I'm trained to sing. I'm not, but you know, hypothetically, I'm trained to sing, but for whatever reason, I'm not whatever thing that they want. So I'm capable of it, but if I had more experience, or if I had this kind of experience, or if I took this kind of training program, or if I met this kind of people, or whatever it is, there's so unpacking the why part is critical. And that requires a lot of logic and as much feedback as you can get from the person on the other side.
Well, I think this is one of actually our most valuable episodes because we're talking about all these things that I think are really hard to name. And I'm really glad that we did it. So thank you very much, everyone, for listening today. We will be back in 2 weeks with another new episode. And thank you so much for spending some time with us today. We'll see you later. Bye. Thanks for listening. This episode was made possible by our audio engineer, Jack Booth, and our growth strategist, Mikey Lulo.
For more resources and inspiration on finding your purpose, check out our Instagram @PathsToPurposePod. We'll see you next time. Bye.